Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
Okay, good morning. It's Saturday, the 19th of July, 2008. That makes this Solder Smoke 88. Welcome. Start out with a little bit of Rome travelogue due to popular demand. Thought I'd tell you guys a little bit about the route to work that I take every day. I walk home from work, but in the morning, it's a combination of walking and bus riding. And I live in the neighborhood of Rome known as Trastevere, which means across the Tiber River. And it's used to be kind of a bit of a down-on-the-heels working-class neighborhood on the other side of the river, I guess sort of on the wrong side of the tracks in Rome. But lately it's become quite, quite gentrified and popular and, frankly, pricey. It's very convenient to central Rome. You can walk right into the heart of Rome very, very easily, and that's very important in a city that has the kind of traffic situation that Rome has. So we don't have to mess with the traffic jams, and I can get to work on foot. But like I said, in the morning I usually combine walking with bus riding. Start out in Trastevere and cross the Garibaldi Bridge over to the other side. And in the course of going over the bridge, I go over a very famous place in Rome, the basically Tiber Island, Isola Tiberina. It's a very famous location, very distinctive too. If you look at a map of Rome or a satellite photograph, you'll see the very distinctive kind of oval island there right out in the middle of the river. It's always been a place of medicine and healing. They used to use it to keep people with communicable diseases kind of isolated from the rest of the population. They still have a very important hospital out there, but it's a nice place. You can easily walk over to the island. And as I said, I walk on a bridge that goes over the island every morning. As I go across the bridge, if I look off to the left, I can see St. Peter's Basilica of Vatican. Hop on the bus on the other side, head over. Bus takes us past Largo Argentina, which is a public square where they discovered some of Rome's oldest ancient sites there, ancient temples. And now it's all kind of dug up and exposed. So as you walk past, you could look down and see the ancient ruins there and the columns. They're really quite old. That site also is not far from where Julius Caesar was assassinated, et tu, Brute, and all that. So it's an interesting neighborhood. Bus then continues down, takes us to Piazza Venezia, which many consider the heart of Rome. And there you're close to the Campidoglio, which is the square that now houses the headquarters of the mayor of Rome. It's a square designed by Michelangelo. And as the bus goes through Piazza Venezia, if I look off to my right, I can always see the Colosseum there off in the distance. We go past Trajan's Column and then up the Corso d'Italia, which is pretty much, I guess, Rome's kind of backbone main thoroughfare. Go up that street and come up to Palazzo Chigi, which is where the Italian Prime Minister has his headquarters, basically Italy's White House, although I don't think he actually resides there, but that's where his offices are. We hang a right on the bus and go up Tritone, and off to the right, although not visible, we go right past Trevi Fountain, one of the more famous tourist sites in Rome, and I often walk past Trevi Fountain on the way home. Then just up a little bit up Tritone to Piazza Bernini, a nice Bernini fountain there. And then hang a left, you're on the Via Veneto. Via Veneto is famous. It's one of Rome's nicest streets. I guess it's sort of like the Fifth Avenue of Rome. Very nice hotels and expensive shops there. It's a tree-lined street. It's really very nice. And it was made famous in all the movies, La Dolce Vita, and all that. So a well-known street from the world of Italian film. And up the top of the hill, there it is. It's the place that I work, and that's basically the trip. And that's this week's Rome travelogue. It's a beautiful city. We enjoy it very much, and it's really a privilege to live among all this history and culture. Great place. All right, moving back to ham radio. I made a rediscovery this week that I think many of you found very, very useful, and I think it was a happy discovery for a lot of us. A while back, Mark, W8MOJ, the musical genius who created the Solder Smoke theme song, Mark sent me a recording of one of Gene Shepard's more famous ham radio shows, and it was really great. And we were looking around trying to find a site on the web where it was, you know, archived and legally archived and all that stuff with all the intellectual property rights protected and all that. And somehow it got away from us. We couldn't find this one particular episode. And I started thinking about this the other day, and I realized how well received the previous Gene Shepard ham radio episode that we talked about was. A lot of guys wrote in saying that they really enjoyed that. So I said, all right, I'm going to try to find this this other one that I know about. And it was January 23rd or 24th of 1973. I think that's it, 73 or 74. Anyway, some Googling, some searching, I found it. And you can find the link to it very easily on the blog page. It's just soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Scroll down a bit. You'll see Shep's picture there and then a link to this particular episode. And this is a really good one. This is the one where Shep talks about his kind of early teenage ham radio friends and the projects that they got involved in their shacks and in their workrooms. At one point, I really got a chuckle. He refers to his shack as his, quote, secret world in my front bedroom. Anyway, he talks about this one guy who was kind of in the group. This guy's name was Anderson, and Anderson was more advanced than the rest of them. They were all pretty advanced, but Anderson was clearly in the lead in terms of technical skill and project sophistication. And he was building something. He had a secret project that he wouldn't talk to them about. They would, as a group, about every month, go down to Chicago's Radio Row and rummage around for needed parts. And Anderson was part of those expeditions, but he was keeping his cards close to the vest, and he wasn't telling them what he was working on. I won't spoil it for you. You guys got to listen to this, because Shepard is the master storyteller, and when he turns his talents to ham radio, it's really a treat. So don't miss it. It's on the blog. Download it. Yeah, put it on the MP3 player. And we're going to look for more ham radio episodes or ham radio discussions from Gene Shepard. If any of you guys know of any of the other shows that in which Shep talked about ham radio, send them to me and I'll post them. So we can get a list of the ham radio programs. He did talk about ham radio quite often. You know, he was on the air every night from WOR New York for many, many years. And a lot of his shows were reminiscences about his childhood and his teenage years, time in the Army. And so ham radio was an important part of all that. And he mentions it frequently. I think I told you guys, that's pretty much how I got involved in ham radio. My father and I used to listen to Gene Shepard in the kitchen of our house outside New York We used to listen to him on WOR. Hey, there's Billy, talking about father and son. Billy just woke up. Anyway, my dad and I used to listen to Shepherd, and it was from listening to him that I got interested in ham radio. Also wanted to tell you guys something. I actually spoke to Gene Shepherd one time. I don't know if I mentioned this on Solder Smoke. I'll have to drag up the recording. Somebody sent me the recording. One night, I guess it was 1976 or so, I was getting up early to go to work, and I was listening, the radio was on, and it was WMCA in New York. It was the Long John Nebel and Candy Jones show, and they had a guest, and the guest's voice was very familiar, and the guest was Gene Shepherd. They were interviewing Gene, and it was a long, wow, they were talking about his books, his movies, his nightclub work. Gene was a very multi-talented guy, involved in a lot of different things. And it was a call-in show, and it was really, I mean, it must have been the end of the program. They must have been talking all night. But I figured it was a good opportunity for me to talk to Shepherd, so I called in, and I got through. And I get a kick out of listening to the recording now. Maybe I'll play it next show. But my New York accent was at the time much thicker than it is now. These things fade as you spend time away. Anyway, with a very thick New York accent, I told Shepherd that my call was WB2QHL, and I thanked him for getting me started in ham radio. He was very gracious. He asked me what bands I worked on, and we talked about ham radio for a few minutes. So it was a really, as Shep would put it, it was a really groovy scene. Yeah, he talked that way in some of the earlier shows. I think that kind of jargon faded as time went on. But anyway, Excelsior. We'll get you guys some more Gene Shepherd programs. Let's see. What else we have on the list here? Found some other interesting stuff on the web. This one popped up on the QRPL list, and it's a bit far afield from QRP, but it's definitely in the homebrew area. The BATC, the British Amateur Television Club, has a really excellent website. I put a link to it on the Blogspot page, and I called it BATC Knack to the Max. Man, these guys have serious cases of the knack. The link that I put up on the Solder Smoke blog is to their video archive. They have done a really good job at selecting some great programs. It's not just a digital download of everything that they ever did. It's carefully selected, really high quality programs. Some of them actually broadcast on commercial television, one of them anyway. Anyway, take a look at the BATC Knack to the Max link on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com website. Pay particular attention to two shows. One, the Bob and Brian show, which I thought was really good. Apparently a local TV station came out and did a kind of a 60-minute style special on ham radio, and especially ham radio of the knackish variety, you know, the technical stuff. And it was kind of funny because they would switch back and forth from our heroes, Bob and Brian, and their ham shacks as they tried to explain their fascination with amateur television and technical stuff and antennas. And then they would go over to the wives, and the wives were kind of sitting around having tea, commiserating about what weird lives they had with these strange, technically oriented husbands. It was quite funny. There's something else they got there from another video that you really should take a look at. G6CJ, Dud Chapman, did a series of lectures on directional antennas. And what he did was he constructed miniature versions of directional Yagi beams and fed them with UHF signals, and then was able to have a detector that would detect an audio tone and physically show, as these little miniature Yagis radiated, how changes in the antennas affected the directional patterns. So I thought that was really good. Check that out. Let's see. Beacon Madness continues, and I've got my my MEPT, my manned experimental propagation transmitter, as we call them on 30 meters. It's on the air, and there's been all kinds of interesting things going on in the world of beacons. The Knights, KNIGHTS, Knights mailing list, now has over 200 members, and it's coordinated by Johan, ON5EX, a really good group. I got an interesting email from Bob, KD4EBM. Bob was talking, I was talking a little bit about how to determine the bandwidth of a CW signal. And Bob comes in with a really kind of a very useful kind of back of the envelope rough estimate way to determine how much of the band you'll be using at different CW speeds. And he suggests that 4 times the word per minute rate will give you a rough estimate of your bandwidth. So if you're running 20 words a minute, you're using 80 hertz worth of spectrum. I did some quick calculations on what my speed is when I'm running the beacon. I estimate that I'm running 3 minutes per word, roughly. That's not 3 words per minute. That's 3 minutes per word, so 0.33 words per minute, which yields a bandwidth of about 1.32 hertz. All right, so we're getting really narrow there. The interesting thing is that you can see the practical effect of this when you look at the grabber screens. Because the other day, my CW signal on the screen of ON5EX up there in Belgium was just below the signal of a very strong station, IZ4BFA. And I looked at the frequency separation. We couldn't have been more than 2 or 3 hertz apart. Now, of course, if you were trying to listen to that with the standard filters of an HF receiver like my Drake 2B with its 500 hertz max selectivity without the Q multiplier, there's just no way that you would have been able to distinguish those signals so close together. But you know, with the really sharp filtering provided by Argo and Spectran and the other sound card based filters, it is, you know, very, very possible to distinguish and to clearly see the difference between signals that close together. IZ4BFA, by the way, it's an interesting development in the area of QRSS beacons. I was confused by this signal at first because it appears to be stereo. If you look at the screen of ON5EX, you'll see the CW call sign of IZ4BFA at one frequency, and then the identical signal with the identical keying at the identical time about 10 or 20 hertz above it. My first thought was that this was some sort of a defect or mistake. I kind of theorized that maybe they were feeding tone into an SSB rig, and maybe there was 2 tones in there. But I was wrong. This was actually intentional. These guys, what they're doing is they're simultaneously transmitting 2 beacon signals close in frequency using 2 different transmitters and 2 different antennas, both keyed by the same keyer. And they're doing antenna tests, and this allows them to make on-the-spot comparisons by looking at the various grabbers around Europe and around the world. So, fine business. One thing I got a chuckle out of this. IZ4BFA's signal is really strong. I mean, almost overwhelmingly strong. It really lights up the screens. And I think it was Johan ON5BX who got some info on how much power these guys are running. And they're running 1 watt, and 1 watt in the QRSS world is like really a QRO. So some very gentle suggestions have been made that maybe the IZ4 BFA station, they need to lower their power a little bit, because, you know, 1 watt is ether busting time here, guys. So it just shows you with QRSS, you're in another world. You're in another world in other ways too. We're really in excellent company on the Knights mailing list, and this is something else that I've put on the blog. On the Knights mailing list recently, some messages have been popping up, and I know he's been there for a while. But somebody well known to the ham radio QRP community, especially on the kind of the computer side of the things, it's Joe Taylor, K1JT. Joe is probably one of the most distinguished of radio amateurs. He won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1993. You don't get to say that very often. He did. It's obviously it's a great thing for us to have him active in our ham radio endeavors. Joe has written a low power a computer program called Whisper. This is something that should attract all true devotees of the QRP arts. Whisper, I think it's weak signal propagation reporting, and it's pronounced Whisper. Joe is the author, and he's been working on improvements to it. It's both a transmission and reception system, and it's beyond me at this point. I don't think it would work too well with the Drake 2B. But guys are having a lot of fun with it, and I put links to the program and more information about it on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com blog page. On Johann's estimate of 200 nights, he also noted that with some of these signals, if we go really low speed, if we're at 1 hertz or 0.5 hertz per night, we have plenty of room in the 100 hertz band for just about everybody. Speaking of QRSS, I might get this on here next week. I don't have it now, but there's been a poem written, an ode to QRSS. It's on Hans Sommer's website. It's really good. I got a real kick out of it. So check that out. What else? Let me look here. Da-da-da. I think that's about it on beacons. Jerry, NR5A, sent in a nice report. He's got a beacon on 10 meters, and he's finally getting some reports. So fine business, Jerry, and I'm glad that's working out for you. Let's see. I want to ask for some help from you guys. Some of you guys I know are devotees of old military radios. I've never gotten into the military radio part of the boat anchor world, but there's a charity shop here in town. I might have mentioned this on a previous episode. There's a charity shop here, and it's in amidst all the old shoes and books and records and knickknacks and doodads and all that stuff that they sell in these kinds of stores. Sitting there, all by its lonesome, is a military shortwave receiver. It looks like a one of the many varieties of a BC-348. Now, it's amazing to me that there's not more detailed information on this stuff on the web, but there really isn't. I tried to look for a kind of a guide to various models of the BC-348, things like that, and I'm unable to find it on the web. This is, as I said, kind of surprising to me. So let me describe this thing for you. And some of you boat anchor military radio aficionados might be able to tell me what this thing is. It looks like a BC-348. It's got that kind of V-shaped frequency dial on it. It looks like the lowest frequency it'll tune is 1,500 kilohertz. And it looks like it goes up to 18 megahertz. It's got, to the upper right of the frequency dial, it looks like it's got a switch called a crystal phasing CW oscillator. It's got a fast tuning dial to the lower right. The plate on it is missing, so the identification plate that would tell you exactly what this thing is, it's not there. I'm thinking it might be a BC-348B or a BC-348C, but I'm not sure. And so it's got, the owner put a tag on it saying that it's a Collins BC-101. So it might be made by Collins, but I don't know if it's a BC-101. That didn't do me any good when I looked on the internet. So we'll have to check that out. If you, any of you guys know what this thing might be, I have a friend of mine here who's who may be interested in it, but we want to find out what it is first before we buy it. Hey, and talk about Christmas in July. I got a care package this week from our man in Vermont, Alpha Alpha 1 Tango Juliet Michael. Man, he sent me some fantastic parts, some things that I would have had a real tough time getting over here. My junk box is stocked. And he also sent along a really great book, one of Pat Hawker's books, one of G3VA's books. I thought I had them all. But he sent me one of the early editions there. So thanks very much, Michael. Much appreciated. And now I feel obligated to build something amazing with all the good stuff you sent me. That's terrific. Thanks very much. Oh, before I forget, I hope you guys have noticed that there have been some audio improvements here. I ask for feedback, and I get feedback sometimes, and I've been getting complaints about the kind of popping sound on the P's, you know, pop, 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 that kind of stuff. And I was told that I needed to make a screen, and it was suggested that I make one out of an old pair of nylons. And, well, somehow, look, this microphone, it's weird enough looking without having some, nylon stockings involved, if you know what I'm saying. It would already kind of raise questions about the balance of the operator. I think adding bits of ladies' undergarments to the whole operation here would put it over the edge and into the area of the inappropriate. So I did something different. It's almost equally weird, but let me describe it to you. I took a little drain plug, one of these little 50-cent plastic drain plugs that you buy in the hardware store that are designed to keep your bathroom drain from getting clogged. It seemed perfect. I just wrapped it around the edge of the microphone, and I used it as a support for the screen. The screen is not made out of nylons, but instead is made out of a dried-out baby wipe. We had some baby wipes here for a while. We were using them to clean off the chocolate off the faces of participants in Maria's birthday party. But I had one around here. It kind of was sitting on the workbench. It got dried out. It's exactly the right texture and width for a microphone screen. So anyway, I think I've gotten rid of the popping sound here. Guys, let me know if I've been successful. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. I hope that passed the test. I might take a picture of this thing. I'm actually quite proud of it. It's the microphone is now held together with duct tape, rubber bands, some old styrofoam, and it's all supported by a Radio Shack third hand. Kind of a strange looking device, but there it is. Looking down the list, some good news. I've been keeping an eye on the website of Dan Small Parts. And you know Dan, who's been very good to many of us over the years, most of us over the years, I think, in terms of being a really good parts supplier for NAC victims worldwide. Dan had a bad accident, and I think he broke both his shoulders, and he had to kind of go out of operation for a while. But I've been periodically going back, taking a look at his website, and there's a glimmer of hope posted just a couple of days ago saying that he's going to be back in business, and he's going to have some special offers and things like that. So let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that Dan gets his small parts business back online real quick. Let me This is going to be a first here, guys. I hope nobody objects, but this is going to be the very first word from our sponsors. I think you guys should check out a kit that's out there. We're going to be occasionally doing this to support some of the ham radio kit makers. The N3ZI is one of the guys who was in the ARRL Homebrew Challenge. We talked about his rig. He came up with a really interesting design. I think there's a picture of it on the cover of a recent QST. Anyway, N3ZI has come up with a frequency counter kit that I think it deserves a place in the ham shacks of knack victims around the world. It's one of the really unusual things about it is that it's available for $9.99. You don't get a lot of ham radio value for $9.99, but the N3ZI has made these kits available. Jerry, NR5A, kindly has sent one in my direction. It hasn't arrived yet because I think of the vagaries of the military postal system that serves us here. But there's Maria Patricia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Maria Patricia has joined the shack. Anyway, N3ZI has these really neat, simple, and really very useful frequency counters available. I have a link to his website on the soldersmoke.blog page, soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Check it out. And we've been getting really good reports on these kits. You could use them for a lot of things. I might use one to digitize my several of my homebrew rigs. All of them are lacking in terms of frequency readout, and I think that'd be a big addition. Also, they might help me keep my my wandering, drifting QRSS beacon in the right spot. Oh, another word from our sponsor kind of things. Be sure to check out the Gadgeteer Books website. Links are on most of the pages there. If you guys are going to buy something from Amazon, you can help out the Solder Smoke effort by doing so through our website. It's going to cost you exactly the same amount of money with Amazon, but ka-ching, they send me a few cents every time you do that, and it'll keep us in it'll keep us in duct tape and solder here, and in that sense, help keep the program going. One other thing, this is not really a sponsor kind of thing, but guys often ask what they can do to help out with the Solder Smoke, the massive Solder Smoke worldwide effort. it would be helpful if you would put links to the Solder Smoke blog page on your pages. That makes it rise up in the Google rankings. It makes it easier for people to find us when they Google something related to all the crazy stuff we talk about. So if you have a web page and you're thinking about putting some links on there, it would be good if you would put some links to the soldersmoke.blogspot.com site. Now, there's another thing I put up on the site that I wanted to let you guys know about. The blogspot folks, the Google boys who help us maintain a lot of these blog sites very easily, have made it easier to subscribe to the blog, and it's worth it to subscribe to the blog because you'll get an alert anytime something new is posted. I try to post something there every 2 or 3 days, but this way you won't miss anything. You'll get an alert either by email or via Yahoo or your Google page or something like that. But if you want to subscribe to the blog, it's now easy to do so. It's in the upper right-hand corner. I think you'll find that a useful feature. All right, that brings us to...
It's time for...
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
I love them.
Indeed.
Yeah, a lot of mail this week. Start out here with Paul in the UK. He announces that they're coming up with a new club. It's not in any way a competition for the GQRP club. It's sort of like a local London area affiliate. It's called the Home Counties QRP Club. Home Counties in the UK refers to the counties close in to London, in the London area, south east England. It's kind of modeled after the Flying Pigs. they've gone with the Flying Pigs club model, guys, and I think they're right. And we followed this model in the NOVA, the Northern Virginia QRP Club. It was basically no organization, no officers, no dues, no minutes, no Robert's Rules of Orders. Just a bunch of guys getting together, talking about rigs and having some fun. Those of you who are in the area will find it, I think, very interesting. It's called the HCQRPC, and they're going to call themselves the Hedgehogs. I'll try to get some links to this up on the Blogspot page, but they shouldn't be too hard. They have some websites up there. They shouldn't be too hard to Google. How many sites could include both Hedgehogs and HCQRPC? Should be easy to find. Martin, KB3PPY, also known as LU1CBL, is intrigued by the Beacon Madness and is thinking about putting together a beacon that he could set up and run and give to friends to run in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Good idea there, Martin. Martin was thinking about 10 meters, and because of my recent activity, I said, well, why don't you think about doing something QRSS-ish on 30? Might make it easier for us to see, given all the grabber activity and the signal-to-noise advantages of slow-speed CW. So Martin wrote back and said he's going to think about doing something in that area. Claudio, I2NDT, has a great, great beacon grabber that I use all the time. I can see my signal. Claudio's up in northern Italy, and I can see my signal on a short skip hop going into his grabber and out onto the internet. Claudio is going to be heading to Thailand and is hoping to bring with him a simple beacon transmitter that he can leave with hams there in the QRSS area. I mentioned Jerry, NR5A. Jerry writes in, and he's working on a Sudden RX. He needs a component. I think I could help him out here. I'm going to go into the junk box and see if I could help him. He's been working on his beacons and updating his web page. It's fine business, Jerry. Jerry also sent me some pictures of his a bicycle with a hamstick antenna on the back. Fine business. Keep on pedaling there, Jerry. Richard, KI4UZI, listens in during his lunch hour at work at the Kennedy Space Center. You know, Richard, if you've got the knack, can you really call working at the Kennedy Space Center working? Let's be real here. You know, this is the place that many of us dream about just visiting, and Richard gets to work there. So fine business for him. I often tell the story now that I don't know how I got away with this, but I guess this is a symptom of a truly bad case of the knack. But somehow I got my very understanding wife to agree to include in our honeymoon a visit to the Kennedy Space Center. You know, before you're married, guys, by definition, you're a single guy, and you don't understand many things about married life. Now, with the benefit of many years of marriage, I look back on this and I said, man, how did I ever think I would get away with that? That, wow. And she was so nice to go along with that. If I proposed something like that now, I don't think it would be quite so well received. But anyway, we went. We had a great time, and it was very interesting. But like I said, it was a little bit over the top, if you know what I mean, guys. Anyway, Richard, thanks for that nice note, and keep up the good work there at KSC. What a great place to work. Jerry, KD0BIK, writes in. He's got a new podcast. Good luck with that, Jerry, and hope everybody will take a listen. I don't have the link. I don't have it handy, but if you Google KD0BIK podcast, I'm sure it'll pop up. Chris, AF4UI, is working on an XTEC 380193 LCR meter and talks about its virtues and measuring powers. I wrote back that many of us really have come to depend on our almost all digital electronics LC meters. I have mine here, and I don't know how I ever worked without it. Bob, at KD4EBM, I mentioned him earlier. He was the guy who gave us the good formula there for estimating the bandwidth of CW signals. He also sent in a very interesting message about a system known as coherent CW that is similar to what we're doing with QRSS. Very interesting. Clayton, ZL3TKA, has a website out there with an unusual name. It's a name I'm sure that will strike people who don't have the knack as a bit odd, but for those of us with the affliction, we understand why ZL3TKA has called his website the Clayton is not crazy website. You know, there needs to be some clarification here when you're a victim of a severe case of the web, and Clayton is right up front about it. He's out there, he's telling people that Clayton, ZL3TKA, is not crazy. That's the name of his website. Clayton, we understand, and good luck in convincing people. When you've got a bad case of the knack, it's always a struggle. More good mail from our friend in Japan, Jonathan, 7J1AWL. Jonathan's an enthusiastic QRP-er. He sent in some great reports, very often from the crowded commuter train that takes him into work in Tokyo. He's reading Crystal Fire. Crystal Fire is one of the books listed at the Gadgeteer Solder Smoke bookstore. You really should check it out. It's the story of Shockley and Bardeen and Bertain and the development of the transistor. Really good stuff. I really enjoyed the book. I thought I could have used a few more diagrams, but I know how it goes when you're working with editors and publishers. The authors always don't always get what they want. You know, the suits get involved, and, well, the next thing you know, you lost all your diagrams. But anyway, Crystal Fire, a great book. And Jonathan reports that he's working some exotic DX using 4 watts from an ATS-3B rig and an Altoid tin. He recently worked Victor 63 Whiskey Alpha. Man, that is an exotic call sign. I think it's out there in Micronesia, the Marshall Islands or someplace. But anyway, fine business on that, Jonathan. Keep that solder melting there in Tokyo. It sounds like a great place to be a radio amateur. John M0JFE he wants to do some homebrew phone, and of course I think I wrote back suggesting that he look into the fascinating world of double sideband. There's recently been some chatter on the GQRP mailing list about double sideband, and I jumped in and put my two cents in. I just said I think the thing about double sideband, the best thing about it is simplicity. And, of course, for that virtue to prevail, you really got to keep it simple. You got to apply that KISS principle here, guys. Some of the suggestions that came up actually ended up, it seemed to me, making the resulting rig far more complicated than it had to be. The great thing about DSB, you have your oscillator, you have the balance modulator, you have a little microphone amplifier and a PA, and man, that's it. You're on the air. So anyway, John, good luck with that. Tony, VK7AX, is doing something unusual with solder smoke, and I find this intriguing. I encourage others to do this if you're interested in it. He takes the solder smoke broadcast, solder smoke podcasts, and replays them on 2 meter and 70 centimeter repeaters all over Tasmania. So that's great. If it brings the program to more listeners, I'm all for it. And thanks for doing that, Tony, and anybody who's listening on 2 meters and 70 centimeters in Tasmania. Well, thanks very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Anybody else wants to do that, let me know. One of the problems that might be a problem for stateside folks who want to do that is a little musical jingle at the beginning. And maybe the my recently launched commercial announcements, but I guess we could get rid of those. let me know if anybody's interested in it. We could come up with a music-free version or something. Or maybe you could just chop off the first minute or so there, and then it would be street legal with the FCC, I guess. Frank, VK2AKG, wrote in with a really nice suggestion about increasing the thermal stability of my QRSS rig. And he provided a really neat kind of thermistor-based idea for a simple crystal oven that you could wrap around the crystal that would keep the crystal constantly at 35 degrees C, and therefore bring about thermal stability to at least that part of the circuit. It's a design by a fellow named Roman Black. It looks like he really knows what he's doing. Frank, thanks for sending that. I think we've licked most of the thermal stability problem with just a little bit of more insulation about around the rig, and it seems to be holding steady at 101400070 plus or minus a few hertz. So great. Our friend Nigel in Dover has been listening to Shep and has really enjoyed it. Nigel reports that he got the knack at the age of 6 when his mother tells him that he took apart a 5-transistor radio. We don't know whether he got it back together, but he took it apart. Thanks for that, Nigel. All right, let's see. Looking through my list here, don't see if I forgot anything. I think I got it. I think I got about it all. The advertisements, home counties. All right, we covered a lot of territory here, guys. I hope the summer's going well for you, or for those of you down under, I hope the winter's going well. And we're having a real nice summer here. My mom arrived from New York and is visiting with us, so we're taking her around and giving her a lot of grandkid time and letting her see a little bit of the Eternal City here. Having a good time. We took the kids to Lake Bracciano yesterday. We threw them in the lake. They had a good swim. Temperatures seem to be down a bit here in Rome now. It's not as hot as it was the last time we spoke. So anyway, things are going our way. I want to turn to that workbench and build something with those parts that Michael sent me. 7-3. We'll talk to you soon. Keep an eye on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Page for more information useful to sufferers of the knack. 7-3, guys.